Hello. So, kind of awkward here for a second. I always tell people, whether or not you're fighting with your spouse or you're separated or whatever's going on, don't take your ring off because you're not available to other people. And tonight, I forgot my ring. So, we are fine. We're not separated. Yes, but don't do that. So, yeah. So I'm Danielle, and we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary in July, which was a milestone that we weren't sure we would ever see. So we're thankful that we did. We did re-engage a year ago, and when we first started it, we thought we were doing good. We're like, why are we here? Like, we're doing awesome. And then week 11 hit, and everything hit the fan, and we didn't even finish our lesson. I was about to burn the book. Like, we didn't even know if we were going to come that night. We still haven't finished the lesson. So even if you're breezing through this, like, hold on. God may get you. But it's good. Reengage is so good. It's blessed us so much, and we're so thankful to be here. This time around, I'm doing a slideshow with pictures. I'm not very coordinated, so I'm hoping that between speaking and clicking pictures on the screen, I don't mess it up. So I hope our story leaves you guys feeling hopeful.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you guys a little bit. I mean, everybody's got a really, there's a lot to their stories, but I'll try to give you a little bit of insight into us and our story here, and we'll share that time. But we initially met when I was in college.
See, I'm already messing up.
Okay. we met in college my first couple weeks, but just a little bit of background beforehand, at least for me, I had grown up in the church for a while, and long story short, came to a point where on a Sunday school morning, we were just talking about, you know, how do you get into heaven? What is it? What do you have to do? You know, maybe the wrong mindset at that point is like, what do you have to do to get into heaven? And it was kind of very checklisty. I was just talking with my Sunday school teacher on that, and one of those things was you got to get baptized. And here I am, I think I was 12 years old at that point, and very naive, and it's December 26, 1999, and I say, I've got 5 days to get baptized before the world ends with Y2K. And I mean, I was very much on a rush. So I came home and that afternoon spoke with my parents, was like, can I get baptized? And it was, and to be honest with you, they just said, sure, we'll do it. There was no relationship, no intimacy with Christ at that point. They just said, we'll do it. And so that evening I got baptized, and it was about, I'll say, 4 to 6 weeks after that, I stopped going to church. I just stopped it, and it wrinkled out into my family as well. I mean, we were very much ones that would be very involved with church, but with me being their kid, and I had a lot of influence on my parents as well, it just wrinkled out into that, and so all through high school, never went to church again until I met this lady here. We met the first couple weeks of school. Oh, you're going to cope? Okay, go ahead.
I don't know. Is that one you're supposed to do? We practiced this, but obviously we didn't do very good. I think this is your part here.
Just go.
Okay. Sorry. So I write my testimony on paper plates. Long story short with that, my very first mission trip that I went on, I was supposed to share my story. I lost it, so I wrote it on a plate. So this is kind of my comfort thing. So we met summer of 06. We had just graduated high school, and he walked into Club Video to pay his movie late fee when that was around, and the rest is history. Here we are.
Yeah, so I had very different intentions when I had met her. You know, not being involved, not having good people around me at that point. And so my intentions with her when we first met was very different than after the first night that we had met. And I'll just fill you in a little bit on our, I call it,
your pre-date.
Yeah. I call it our pre-date date.
Sorry.
I'm throwing her off here, sorry. I call it our pre-date date. But first time that I met her, you know, obviously we exchanged phone numbers and stuff, and she invited me over to her parents' house. She wanted me to meet her parents as our kind of first date, which was a little odd to me. But when we sat down that evening, she really just laid things out. I mean, her parents went to bed pretty early, and so we just sat out on the couch just talking, just getting to know each other. But she obviously wanted me to know a lot more about her than I was willing to share about myself. And so she lays out kind of, here's the law if you're going to want to date me at this point. And it's, she had just been coming back from a mission trip, was very much on fire for the Lord. And she had grown up since about eighth grade in the church at that point. But from our first date, that very first night we get together, and while we're in college, she just says, I'm a Christian, I love the Lord. I don't know what your intentions are for me, but here's what my intentions are for this relationship. I'm not going to have sex with you, and if you want to do any of those kinds of things, there's the door. And I'm like, here I am, very first time I'm meeting this girl and having hamburgers at her parents' house. She's laying down these kinds of laws for me. And here I am, just very wide-eyed, like, no, I had no plans on anything like that.
He was like a deer in the headlights. He was going.
She really put the fear of the Lord in me at that night. I'll get to that point a little bit later, but what had happened too was she had really changed. I could tell something was totally different about her than every other girl I had known growing up. And it was just her passion for the Lord. And so literally that night, on my way back to my dorm room, here I am just a couple weeks into college with all these plans of what's relationships going to look like, or quote unquote relationships going to look like. And I stop at the Walmart on the way home, pick up a Bible, and start reading it at my dorm room that night, and just say, I need to have a relationship with the Lord at this point. And so just her sticking her neck out there, the very first meeting that we have, totally altered the events of what my life is going to be like. And I'm forever thankful for what she did on that.
Yes, so I didn't grow up going to church with my parents, but my neighbors invited me. And so from third grade on, I just was in the church. In eighth grade, I accepted Christ. And then in 2006, my senior year, I had just come off of a mission trip and was like planning to move to Michigan. I felt the Lord calling me into missions, and I had like this whole plan of like up and moving. And I'm like, you can either come with me or you can stay here. But when I met him, the course of my life also changed. He didn't tell me about him accepting Christ that night until 3 months later. But this was our first date. He wouldn't hold my hand or put his arm around me or look at me.
She scared the living daylights out of me.
So this was the next week or two after we'd had that initial conversation. And so the whole time at the movie theater, I'm sitting like this because I'm like, is he going to hold my hand? So I'm like, you know, keep stretching.
I'm
and
like
he
this.
Was like that. So the first date was fun. But then he officially asked me to be his girlfriend like a month later. And when he shared that he had accepted Christ that night, I just felt like he was going to be this great spiritual leader, and I was like ready to get married yesterday. So I threw this picture in there just for fun. Napoleon Dynamite was a big thing whenever we first started dating, so he came over and we dressed up in the middle of September like Napoleon Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we dated, 2 years had gone by, he was getting ready to leave for college, and I was like, clock's ticking, buddy. I'm like, if we're going to get married, like, you need to do it now, because, like, I'm getting old, and this is what we need to do. So kind of had some pressure there, but we got engaged on the Naturals baseball field.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. But we thought that because we were believers that we were going to have this easy peasy marriage, that we would never have any struggles, that God was just going to bless us and that everything was going to be awesome. And so instead of planning my wedding based on biblical truths, I planned my wedding off of Jessica Simpson's wedding book, I Do, who was already divorced by the time we were planning our marriage. So
great role model.
Yes. So we were just setting ourselves up for disaster. But shortly after we got engaged, we started fighting a lot and just arguing, and things were already shaky. So we broke up at JCPenney's while we were registering for our wedding. I don't even know what we got in a fight about. It was probably about coffee pots.
Probably some kind of glass rooster we wanted to
put. Yeah, like I wanted a pink one and he wanted blue or something. I don't know. So anyway, so we broke up at JCPenney's and I was like, I don't love you. I can't marry you. It's not right, blah, blah, blah. And then we ended up getting back together, bumped the wedding up, and we got married in July 25th of 2009.
So I'll speak a little bit about kind of our first year of marriage. Yeah, and kind of going back to the pre-marriage stuff, there was probably a lot of red flags available for us that we just were too naive to understand that were there. I mean, going through our pre-marriage counseling with the pastor that we were with, I wouldn't even consider it counseling at all. It was about a 20-minute session that we did. And initially, he just gave us a couple forms, fill these out, like, what are your values, what are things you like to do, and things like that. And second time when we met for those 20 minutes, it was him, probably 15 of it was him reviewing it, and then 5 minutes of, everything looks good, you know, everything's lined up.
We were very compatible.
Great. So we were hopeful in that, all right, we've got things straight. And I think we leaned a lot on the Lord at that point, thinking that our relationship with the Lord was good, that we were mature in it, but really, as we've gone through our first year of marriage, you could see the lack of maturity that was in there, for sure. And so our first year of marriage was my senior year of college. Now, I had an extra semester as well. I needed to get a certain amount of hours for my degree, but I call it a transition period for us because I didn't feel like we really had hit real life at that point, although we were doing real life things. Majority of my time was either in college. I was full-time playing baseball, and she was working full-time at a dentist up there. And our first year of marriage was one of those things where when we were together, things were rough, whether it's piddly little things of you overcooked the rice for dinner, or you didn't lock the door on the way out, things like that. I mean, if I had to go back and try to pinpoint any of those things, really what they were, I couldn't tell you. And I'm sure that's true with many of us in our first years of marriage, of you don't even know what you fought about, but you fought a lot, for sure. And I'll let her speak into a little bit more on our first year of marriage. She'll probably speak more into when we had first moved down, gotten out of college.
So we celebrated our 1 year anniversary in Chicago. But moving away right after we got married was hard. I lived at home until I got married. So moving away, learning how to be a wife, doing all the things, we didn't have a church, and it just was, you know, even though he was at a Christian college, we were surrounded by people who were partying and just participating in things that, like, we didn't agree with. And so it just was really lonely. We were fighting all the time about everything. It'd be like, you know, if he ordered a tea and I wanted him to get a Coke, it would erupt into this huge fight, and we would fight for weeks on it. So at 6 months of marriage, we started counseling with a couple that we were really fond of. I was really wanting him to be the spiritual leader of the family, and he was pushing back on that, and just everything was just such a mess. We were both still really selfish, and nothing was changing. So we ended the counseling, and in December of 2010, we moved back down here. We moved in with his in-laws, or not his in-laws, we moved in with his brother and his wife and our nephew while he was looking for a job. And man, we tried to hide our fights from them, but when you live in their
spare bedroom, 12 by 12 space inside a home, it's tough to hide things.
You can only be fake for so long. And they definitely saw our arguments. They told us that we needed to learn to fight fair before we could move out. And so we were just ready to go. Like, we needed our own place. We needed to be able to yell at each other and not have whisper fights, like, in the back of their house. So, so in April of 2011, we bought our first house. Things were already still rocky, and then now we're learning how to own a house and be responsible for that. We got married when we were 21, so we're still very young and immature at this point. But 2 weeks after we bought our house, my Aunt Judy died, and that sent me into a downward spiral of depression. I ran as far away from the Lord as I could get. I was angry. I was frustrated. I was lost. Everything was just really dark. And this started to spill over into our already crumbling marriage, and Satan started to lead me to believe that divorce was a pretty good option, and that that might be something that we should consider if I wanted to be happy again. The Holy Spirit convicted me of our vows, and the Lord just led me to the verse in Mark that talks about what God has joined together, let no one separate. And so I kind of lived off of that, but it still felt in the back of my mind, it still felt like it would be easier to walk away. So we celebrated our 2-year anniversary. But we were both still really far from the Lord. We hadn't found a church here. Things between us were so bad. The fights, there was no abuse, but our fights would erupt to the point where we would go weeks, like 2 weeks without talking. And then we'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. And then things would be good for a week, and then something else would happen. And just the cycle of constant fighting and trying to hide it from our family. And it got to the point where he moved into the spare bedroom and our relationship shifted from husband and wife to roommates. It felt like things were never going to be mended. It felt like we would never be happy. And I just didn't even, like, I loved him because he was my husband, but I didn't love him. I didn't even like him most of the time, and I'm sure he felt that way about me. So in November of 2011, I left, and I moved back in with my parents, and there just was no hope.
Yeah, so through this time, you know, we just moved into our own home, so we're outside of family. We can have our fights by ourselves, and we didn't have kids at this point either. All through meandering through this, we had kind of church hopped through things. I mean, I grew up in this area. She grew up in Neosho. But, it, you know, like I said, back right before I got into high school, I had stopped going to church at that point. And so when we had gotten together, we wanted to be a part of a church. We were when we were in college. And we came down here, and we probably went to about 20 different churches over the course of a year. We just couldn't find a place that we felt that we could contribute to.
And I was like, we're not going to fellowship. It's too big.
Yeah, fellowship was actually the last place on our list that we wanted to go to. Just because part of the size of it, and you know, I think you've heard some of you may have heard Lamar Steiger say, this place has got to be a cult, you know. There's so much going on, but we kind of bought into that. But then we just said, all right, we have tried pretty much what we felt every place within Northwest Arkansas that we could go to, and let's just try fellowship as a last resort. And when we first came in, we loved the place, we loved the worship, and we just said, let's dive in, let's get into a community group. We started getting plugged into some things, and it really changed our life, for sure, as far as getting plugged in, building relationships with people. But also through that process, you know, when we're going through these struggles of fights over and over and over again of things we can't think of anymore, I had kind of backed out and said, I'm just going to pour my life into my work. I felt that I was skilled enough to be able to move up the chain and things, and I could use my skill sets to just be successful, and so I took that kind of as an out for things and poured myself into it, even to the point where I'd be working so many hours, I'd be coming home and pulling out my key fob and putting it on the deadbolt and thinking that that's going to open the door when I get home. I mean, just always feeling like I'm at work, never wanted to be home at that point, and I didn't feel like we had hope either at that point.
So there was basically no hope for us because we weren't desperate for Jesus. But there was one night that I just was searching for something to help me get through this time, because at this point I was like, oh, like, what am I going to do? And I found this little sign at the mall that says, hold on. And when I saw this, that's when things for me shifted in my heart. I knew that in this moment that Jesus was the only one who was going to save our marriage, and that I just needed to cling to him. I needed to cling to the cross, because that was where our hope was going to be at. Otherwise, I didn't know if we were going to make it. So when hope finally entered our marriage, his grace came into it, and it began to soften our hearts, and we just decided that divorce wasn't an option, and we were going to do whatever it took to save our marriage. So we started counseling, and the first night of counseling, our counselor said, well, it's not going to get better if she doesn't come home. So at this point, he had been, his guard was up, and stubbornness probably was a part of it, but he just didn't want me to come back home. And so when the counselor said that night, he looked at me and he said, I want you to come home. So I called my parents, and they brought my stuff, and I moved back home, and we hit counseling head on, sometimes twice a week. Sometimes it was just me, sometimes it was just him. And we found fellowship, and it's like things started to turn around for us. So we did 7 months of counseling, and God just dropped people in our story that stepped into our mess with us without judgment, and we had spiritual leaders and just these amazing married couples who were pouring into us and were showing us what marriage and commitment looked like. So at the very end of our counseling, you know, we started to see the gap between us was getting smaller. Communication shifted from harsh to loving. Our love languages were being met. We came back to life, and it was just so beautiful how God just did all of that. And at the very end of our counseling, we told our counselor that we were pregnant, and it was so exciting. So we had our first son, Brody, on Valentine's Day, and God just continued to bless us and bless our marriage. And 3.5 years later, we got our daughter. We have Vera. She's our wildflower, but we love her. God just mended so many things for us that would have been lost if we had decided to get divorced. In May, these are just fun pictures. God's been really good to us. We got to celebrate our 30th birthday on the beach. And then this might look like a sweet picture, but our children are actually screaming and crying in this picture. Yeah, so I'm sure some of you can relate, but this is real life, and we love it. So in May, we're missing the picture. I'm looking at the camera. So in May, we found out that we were expecting our third baby. And then in August, we found out we lost our baby at 13 and a half weeks. And then we buried our baby. His name was Taylor. So there's that. But all of this would have never existed had we split all those years ago.
Just going through these pictures here, you know, we spend so much time, and it feels like those hard times are just so drawn out. But then when we started talking about when we had our kids, that was 3 years between those two pictures, between our first son and our daughter. And we just went through it like that. I mean, time flies when you're having fun, you know. But it's those hard times that are so much more expanded on us. But looking back, you know, we say we kind of fade to black here. You know, looking back and reflecting on it, there's a story there. And it's the reason why we're here is because a story was being conjured up. God was placing people in our lives for things to happen. And if we had gone that route where we said we want to go our own way, this whole slideshow would have been black for you guys. You know, there would be no story there at all.
So everything would have been lost had we not decided to stay together. This is what our family looks like now. We have our two earthly babies and our heavenly baby. The bear in the picture represents Taylor. It's wearing the onesie that I was going to announce him in. And even though this isn't the way I vision my family looking, I wouldn't have had any of this if we hadn't committed ourselves and our marriage to the Lord. I'm certain it would have ended in divorce had we not made that commitment. But your marriage doesn't have to die, and the dreams that you have don't have to be lost. I know that it's easy to feel alone when things are crumbling. I know it can feel suffocating, dark, and hopeless, but God wants to meet you wherever you are, whether your marriage is great or whether it's falling apart. God wants to meet you right in that place. Doesn't matter how messy it is, he's going to be there. You just have to get to a place where you let down your walls and you let Jesus begin to heal your heart and you let Jesus heal your husband's heart. And it's in that place that he will begin to heal your marriage. And you'll start to come together as one and you'll begin to become the image of Christ and what marriage can look like. And it's beautiful. It's so painful. It's beautifully painful to be in a place of brokenness. But it's where you come together, and it's where you start to see Jesus mending all this brokenness between you. And when he starts to restore those things, people are going to look at you, and they're going to say, what is happening? And it's where you get to say, Jesus, he's mending this. He's restoring this. He's bringing us together. We're leaving this legacy for our children, our future children, to show them that it doesn't matter what life throws at you, like, Jesus is enough to restore anything that's going on in your marriage. So hold on, because God is not done with your story, and he's going to use this for his goodness, and it's going to be so beautiful. It might suck right now, but it's going to be so good and so beautiful in the end.
And then what I'll leave you with, the verses on Psalm 139, 8 through 12, and I love the way the Message puts it here. This is just talking about intimacy with your spouse. I consider it part of intimacy with your spouse, but also intimacy with the Lord, because what we had tried so much just to continue the intimacy and cultivate and enrich that intimacy between us, but there was no vertical relationship that we had. But what Psalm 139, 8 through 12 from the Message says, if I go underground, you're there. If I flew on morning wings to the far western horizon, you'd find me in a minute. You're already there waiting. Then I said to myself, oh, he even sees me in the dark. At night, I'm immersed in the light. It's a fact. Darkness isn't dark to you. Night and day, darkness and light, they're all the same to you. And when I think and reflect on that verse, that scripture is just saying, God is there in the midst of our brokenness. God is there in the midst of the dark times, even when we didn't feel like we're there. I mean, that's what David's saying here. There's so much emotion in what he's saying in that, is that you're not alone. God and Jesus is there for you, and he wants to have that intimacy with you, even if you don't want it. You know, we didn't want it when we were just trying to fix ourselves, which didn't turn out well in the beginning, but when we started developing that intimacy with Christ, he was there ready and willing, open-handed, and said, come to me. I'm there for you. Yeah. Well, we want to thank you guys for letting us speak and share our story. We love being able to do that. It really, and when I talk about sharing your story, it's good to share it with others too. And this enriches us. I mean, when we talk through, we're kind of pre-prepping this. I mean, we learn a lot more about each other. There's different aspects of relationship that we may not even know when we're talking about it, but we're thankful that we're able to get invited back and share our story with you guys. So thank you for having us.